This episode brought to you by Sheraton.
And the American crowbar industry. It can open doors. It can threaten people. Crowbars.
International business machines. By the pool. Still look up things on your database. Does he have the database of all of his employees?
He must have it on a floppy, right?
Welcome back, everybody. It's Magnum Podcast. I'm Jason Snell. I'm here to talk about Magnum PI with my compatriots, David J. Lauren, Philip Michaels. Hi, guys.
Hello. Say, who's that walking through the door right now? It looks like it's someone from another podcast.
Well, this is a crossover with, of course, no! the Murder, She Wrote podcast that doesn't exist, hosted, if it were one that existed, by Scott McNulty, who joins us as well. Hi, Scott.
I am from the future, where my Murder, She Wrote podcast is very popular.
I'm sure.
It's Random, She Wrote.
That's right.
I'm going to wait for a guest, damn it. Let me try that again. Okay. I'm going to wait for a professional guest from the mainland.
Technically, we should have waited 5 years after launching our podcast, or 7 years after launching our podcast, and then your podcast would come along, Scott, and then become more popular. And then we would do a crossover. Because
we're doing this in podcast time and not TV time.
Yeah, that's right.
Four episodes of a podcast is like 8 years of TV.
We're jumping around.
I'm joining the show as Downtown Brown, so, you know.
So for those who are curious about what the heck we're talking about,
yes.
We watch Magnum P.I. Season 7, Episode 9, Novel Connection, and, gonna blow your mind here,
whoa,
Murder, She Wrote, Season 3, Episode 8, Magnum on Ice. It's a CVS crossover from 1986.
Woo.
Yeah, where on a Thursday night, Magnum P.I. got into a little bit of trouble. And then on a Sunday night, Jessica Fletcher bailed him out of it.
That's right. Although if you only watch
somewhere between Friday and Saturday, like the entire ending of the first show changed.
No, I was going to say, if you only watch the Magnum PI episode, you're like, well, that story is done.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So one of the things that happens is at the end of the Magnum episode, there was a syndication version that they shot, which is the one that's available if you get the DVDs or watch it on iTunes or watch it on Amazon. And it is, I mean, I guess we'll get there, but like supremely unsatisfying in that it just, they arrest a guy and they're like, oh, well, he was the bad guy. I guess it's over now. Goodbye, everybody. Whereas in Murder, She Wrote, and in the original airing, that guy, Magnum shoots him, but he doesn't have a gun and the cops arrive immediately to put Magnum under arrest. And then
in Magnum, it's a clean kill. And in the crossover, it's not a clean kill.
Yeah, exactly.
See, that's, I only watched the version on Amazon Prime.
Right.
Was very confused.
Yeah, well, no, I don't think that other version exists, confusing. But fortunately, the scenes that happen at the end of it are at the beginning of Murder, She Wrote, so you
right.
can figure out
right.
what just happened in this parallel universe where there's a second part.
The Magnumverse.
Yeah, so... let's start with Novel Connection. This is an episode where big crossover. Jessica Fletcher doesn't show up until halfway through the episode, so we're waiting for her. They keep adding women of a certain age to this episode, and none of them are Jessica Fletcher.
That's true.
And all of them, except for Jessica Fletcher, who's a saint. All of them are the most annoying people who have ever visited Robin Masters' estate, and he has very annoying friends.
That is true, and they all have increasingly baroque stories that they're telling.
Oh boy!
Now I will say, you know, you can tell the difference in directors because in the Magnum episode, I don't think the director liked any of the women because they are all shrewish and shrill, and I mean, the friend who's the editor who worked with Robin years and years ago, she's insufferable.
She's terrible. She's so awful. I just wrote down that. Like, I just wrote down she sucks. On my notes. That was the best I
could muster. Every line she speaks, you're like, when does she die? Is she the one who gets killed? Oh, let her get killed. And then in the Murder, She Wrote half, she's fine. She's still annoying.
She's annoying. She's still annoying.
She's, She's still annoying, but she's not shrill.
So,
and she's doing, you know, she's doing this all through Magnum. He's a bum. He's a bum. Yeah. And in Murder, She Wrote, she's just like, Jessica,
She's a human being. Because in Murder, She Wrote, she's like, oh, Jessica, I didn't know you had a gentleman caller, Mr. Higgins.
That's true.
She does a lot of that stuff. Yeah, so we've got Amy, who is the heiress, but who is now a personal assistant. We've got Joan, who is Jessica Walter.
Yes, she's Jessica Lucille Bluth.
Yes, at the very end of her sex kitten phase.
Yes, she is a middle-aged woman on the make in Hawaii.
She's a grieving widow.
I think 39. She's over it, Scott. I think she's over it.
Just a little bit.
And then we've got the awful woman who is mean to everyone. And we get the plot. Okay, Novel Connection doesn't make a lick of sense. It is like an episode where people just kind of run around and things happen, and you're like, why? What is this? Magnum delivers a prescription at one point. There's in the middle of a lengthy music background, no dialogue, lots of cars driving on back streets of Honolulu. Uh-oh. Then there's a brief bit of excitement where there's some gunfire, but it goes on. It's like 5 minutes of cars driving around, Magnum delivering a prescription to the wrong hotel room, Magnum getting back in his car, Magnum driving around the corner. It just goes on forever as the do kind of plays in the background,
and to no purpose. It doesn't even advance the plot or
he's trying to find out who's following him, and he fakes him out by getting him to go to the wrong hotel room,
right, thereby almost killing the random guy he puts in the hotel room.
Which
My favorite part, though, is the exciting, will Magnum fill out the loan application for the extraneous real estate development deal?
That was gripping. That was
while you're waiting for Jessica Fletcher to appear, we instead get this whole side plot where TC and Rick, who I always kind of viewed as Magnum's hangers-on, they are the guys who are movers and shakers who are going to buy some land on Maui, and they've got the money, and Magnum has to fill out loan paperwork because Magnum's not liquid enough like Rick and TC, apparently.
and that storyline was the only remotely relatable storyline in the episode.
And it's not at all.
It is not.
No one will be seated during the thrilling loan discussion. This is
although I figured out that whole thing was just an excuse to get them out of the storyline for Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah,
because they're not even in that.
And also to get Magnum into a helicopter so he could creepily stalk a car with his friend's helicopter.
It is
his own car.
One of the things that you see when you watch these two episodes is how they fit them together in order to be able to make these two episodes. So Jessica doesn't show up until more than halfway through the Magnum episode. Magnum is, as the title would suggest, on ice. He's in jail for most of the Murder, She Wrote episode so that they could have the stars of the TV shows. They couldn't have them all both be in the whole episode of each other's TV shows. There's not enough time. Rick and TC get sidelined. Higgins does get to be on Murder, She Wrote. And they create this whole Rick TC sidelight for that. It's funny to see that they have to structure it in a very particular way because they don't, you know, they can't have all the stars all the time.
No, well, because then if there's a terrible attack, then you've lost two shows.
Yeah,
whereas is the Secretary of the Agriculture who gets to risk his life.
And how can ship captains at sea hope to navigate if there are no stars left in the sky?
Exactly.
Because they're all on Magnum PI and Murder, She Wrote.
I must admit that my Magnum knowledge is not as deep as my Murder, She Wrote knowledge. So I have a question for the experts here. Is he always so desperate to be part of a case?
Nope.
Yes.
Because he really, really wants to be part of this case.
I disagree.
Case.
I think Magnum really wants to always prove himself to Higgins.
Not always begging.
No.
But he rightly sees this as his job, since this is, you know, at Robin's Nest.
I would say
that.
I would say that Magnum in this is way more jerky than he normally is in terms of like, oh no, I'll take it. And who's your other investigator? And when Jessica does show up,
he is condescending as hell to Jessica yes. Fletcher. And I will not
care for it.
No. Scott, it's funny because I thought you were going to ask, does Magnum usually wear shorts that are that short? And my answer to that is yes.
I need the answer to that.
Do people usually get comical head wounds in the series?
Yes.
They every time.
That's funny.
It's so bizarre. I mean, even at the time, like I said offline, this is an episode that pissed me off when I saw it the first time. I hated both halves at the time. This brought it all back.
You're welcome.
Because, thank you. Neither show shows off their characters to really good effect. And in both halves, basically the character that isn't the main character of the series has to act stupid so that the other one can be smart. It's really weird. And considering Magnum was written by a longtime Magnum writer who, you know, ran the show for a while, I think, everyone in Magnum acts totally out of character. It's like just like the barest hint of, yes, there's Higgins being Higgins, and yes, there's Magnum being a bum, but it's not. It's like everything is just off. And it kind of shows, like, they apparently did this under protest. CBS wanted a crossover.
I really got that sense.
That comes I'm out shocked. Like raging right, well, through the
I,
whole
I,
episode.
I can't watch either of these episodes without thinking they didn't try that hard. Like they didn't no. like they were made to do this, and neither side really wanted to do it. The Murder She Wrote episode. Okay, I'm just going to lay it out on the table. Murder She Wrote episode vastly superior to the Magnum PI episode in that things sort of happen, and although they're complicated and weird, at least things happen because the Magnum episode just sort of drifts. But even so, yeah. I don't think it's a good representation of Murder She Wrote. And the shame of it is, because it does feel like they're going through the motions here, neither of them wants to do this. CBS made them agree to it. And they didn't put in their best effort. The shame of it is there are little glimmers of what this should have been, which is the obligatory plot that is only there to drag you through an episode where it's all about character interaction. But they muff the character stuff, which is other than Higgins and Jessica, who I love, and I would have loved to see
together.
A whole bunch more of Higgins and Jessica, because that was a great combination. But not Magnum and Jessica.
This absolutely had a Simpsons critic crossover feel. Where the end of for those who haven't seen that episode, there was an animated series called The Critic, and Fox made them do a show to promote it, and you could feel the contempt seething through the screen with and it actually ends with the critic going, and if you ever want to be on my show, and Bart goes, no, we're not doing that.
And what's so weird is The Critic was created by Simpsons people who went back to run the show afterwards.
It's so weird. Really, the problem with this episode is you can see it in the Higgins Jessica Fletcher interaction, because they have that whole thing where Higgins is all, oh, obviously this is an attempt on my life, and they go nowhere with that.
No.
They just sort of, well, let's drop that thread can be left.
Jessica
untied.
Doesn't believe him for a second, and she keeps coming back and saying, well, I did continue investigating the actual things that happened, and not your fantasy about being hunted by a hitman. Mm-hmm.
And your past.
Now, this is my like writer's brain, and not even like plotting writer. This is just like basic writing brain that got upset today. I didn't notice it last time, but you know, when Jessica shows up, because the whole thing is, you know, oh, my investigator from the mainland, and it turns out to be Jessica, and she's like, what have you been telling them? I'm not an investigator. I'm me, and. So when they're having their conversation, just the two of them, and Jessica says to her, you seem to have inferred that I'm to them. And she goes, no, I didn't infer that to them. And I'm like, implied.
It's implied.
Implied. You're an editor. Implied. Yes. I just got angry.
Well, that's
and I
outrageous.
Thought, you guys are the editors.
I noticed,
you know, so it's like,
I noticed that, too. I'm ashamed to say it, but I noticed it. How about that scene in the Murder, She Wrote episode where Magnum boasts about how he's read Jessica's book and then immediately says, well, not all of it, and I didn't get to the end, but I'm pretty sure I know who did it, and then does and then gets it wrong. That made me laugh. That was a pretty good...
Well, that's classic Magnum.
Oh, Magnum. I must say, he doesn't come off very well in either of these episodes.
No. Well, I mean, the end, he gets to be the hero. And how does he do it? He sneaks behind our killer, who we're going to, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But he has the opportunity.
The entire time.
He has the opportunity very slowly, and he's moving along a window. He has the opportunity to jump through the window and dive and defeat the killer and disarm her. Mm-hmm. And instead, he just stands at the window and says, "Put the gun down, Joan."
I've called the police.
At which point, she might as well just turn around and kill him. Like, why?
And she's like,
even?
"Well, where is your gun? Why didn't you pull your gun? Well, you know my gun has been impounded.
You know I'm unarmed.
and on a ledge."
He's not tackling Jessica Walter. That would be mean.
On a similar note, at the end of the Magnum episode, after all the thing, oh, someone's trying to kill the women. We don't know which one of the women they're trying to kill. Oh, no. And they all wind up at this party off of the estate. Mm-hmm. And Higgins mm-hmm. is saying, you know, I brought you here because I could hardly leave two women. I actually wrote this down. I could hardly leave two women alone on the estate after yesterday's attempt on your life. Now, I'll be back shortly.
Mm-hmm.
What? Well, and then he just walks away in a crowd. Gotta mingle. There's the hitman.
Safe.
The hitman's over there.
That's right.
Okay. Other things I wanted to mention. Great product placement in the Murder, She Wrote episode. They can't shoot at the estate for the Murder, She Wrote episode for very many days, apparently. They probably had one day to shoot there. And I kept thinking of the logistics of it. So they move to a hotel because it'll be nicer or whatever now that Robin's not coming. But really, it's also because the Sheraton... King Kamehameha Club or whatever it is. I don't know. The Sheraton.
The Royal Hawaiian
has, in exchange for prominent images of the Sheraton logo, allowed us to shoot at their facility and refer to it by name and probably
crew. They almost should have had a scene in there where someone goes, "A murder at the Sheraton? Why, that's not anything that would ever happen here."
Yeah.
So the Sheraton is delightful with three great restaurants on site.
Yeah.
And
beautiful views that you can see out the back of the window in all the scenes that are taking place at the Sheraton.
Although apparently forensic expert Che Fong from 5-0 is the desk guy at the hotel.
Well, Magnum PI doesn't share a universe with, or Murder, She Wrote doesn't share a universe with Hawaii 5-0. That's too far.
That's right.
That goes too far. Well, John Hillerman was on another Murder, She Wrote episode too, not as Higgins. So
He was a half brother.
Yes, he was one of Higgins' half brothers.
Oh boy.
There's one thing I wanted to talk about in the final of the Magnum episode, where Magnum is chasing the hitman around the party at a very leisurely pace. One should say
it's party. It's a party
and in
chase.
A loop.
Party pace.
They go in a loop,
and they're going in a loop. And there is a waiter in the background who is going about his waiterly duties while this chase is happening. Just going, "Yes, cocktail. Who needs a topper? Who finished with that glass, man?" And it's just great. I salute that man who, given that the writers half-assed this, is the only one with commitment to craft in this episode.
My favorite scene in the Magnum episode is where Jessica insists that Magnum join them for lunch, and Higgins places him at a TV tray in the corner.
The kitty table for his
and then
lobster.
Somebody shoots them, and Magnum kind of just trots out to try and chase them down. But he doesn't want to break a sweat in his tiny shorts.
No, you got to move at a very leisurely pace. It's true. I also wanted to mention my favorite single scene in this entire set of episodes, which is when we go back to check in on Mr. Houston, who we saw briefly in the Magnum episode, as the guy up in the office building.
Your most generic 1980s evil businessman.
Yes, exactly right. But when Jessica meets him at his home, they have a lovely conversation out on his lanai facing the ocean.
Beautiful.
Where he is working, and I say that because there's nothing on the screen, on an IBM PC that has been set up like on a metal wicker thing. A picnic
ergonomic
table out in his backyard, but he's working on his computer.
It is a good thing that it never rains in Hawaii suddenly. that there's no sudden downpours that would short out that computer, because boy, that would be a job and a half to lug back inside every time.
I'm sure there's an awning or something.
I just assumed that the woman who brought him the iced tea, one of her duties is to move the computer wherever he's sitting.
Yeah, that's right. Probably so. I love it. It's inexplicable. I really don't know. What I think, and I like to think about this whole episode, is this was not just a Magnum PI crossover. The one thing that the Murder, She Wrote people got out of it was we get to have Hawaiian setting for an episode of Murder, She Wrote. So let's play into it. And so you get the scene that could very easily be in his office or den or something. And instead, nope. He's on the grass next to the ocean with his IBM PC right there. Why? Don't know.
They did whip up a lovely version of the Murder, She Wrote theme with a Hawaiian guitar. So
oh, the steel guitars were killing me. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. But yeah, when he's sitting there and she goes, well, so-and-so wasn't in your employ. And he just starts tapping the keyboard. And he's clearly, from the sound of the keys, he's not typing anything. And the screen isn't on. And the computer doesn't seem to be on. And then he just goes, nope. And I just wanted her to go, what are you doing, sir? Yeah. Your computer isn't on. Yeah.
You expected him to pick up a banana and go, bring, oh, I have to go.
It's like, you know, you're such an observational genius, lady.
That computer's not even plugged in.
She still writes with a typewriter, though. So.
That's true. It's not until like season 6 that she gets a word processor. This great scene with the computer ends with one of the great ridiculous threatening lines in television history, be careful, Mrs. Fletcher, our climate doesn't agree with everyone. To which I say, yes, the famous Hawaii climate that people are bothered by in some way. It's so comfortable and warm and pleasant that you may not like it. What?
Yes, it pleases you to death.
I would counter, Jason, that is not even the greatest threatening line in that episode. I would posit that is when the estranged husband of the secretary, God knows why he's in here.
Yeah, with a crowbar.
Has a crowbar that he has used to force his way into a room. Says, this crowbar was very effective at getting in here. I imagine it would be opening more a door. If I bash your head in. Yes, that is how crowbars work, sir.
It's very effective at opening a door. I bet it would be effective at opening a head.
Yeah.
It's even worse.
Yeah.
Threatening.
This gun is very effective at shooting bullets at a high rate of speed.
Now, and the gun. Okay, so the guns in this episode.
Oh, boy.
They're all talking about here Magnum's 45 and the 45 shells. And if you watch, he's carrying a 9mm gun. And then they start talking about a 9mm. And I'm like, come on.
I don't know anything about how guns work, but I will say that there are the fact that they're like counting bullets. And then Jessica, by the way, because the police have investigated this murder that happened that Magnum committed. And Jessica Fletcher literally just kind of looks over in a corner and goes, there's a bullet over there.
Yeah, well, we went over the whole thing with metal detectors and fine tooth combs. No, you didn't.
Part of Jessica's presence in any place, she immediately makes all the police completely incompetent. Mm, so
clearly,
it's just a side effect of her being there.
And the police in Magnum PI, not the sharpest tacks, anyway.
I really missed Tanaka in the first episode, so I was glad to see him in Murder, She Wrote. Because I never liked the captain.
The captain gets put in charge of this one. Although that allows Jessica to do her thing, which is actually a great moment where she's like, yes, I know the governor, and I want to thank the governor for the compliance of the police. What was your name again? And the captain's like, okay, you can
talk to the guy in the short shorts.
You can talk to Magnum.
The other weird gun thing. Well, one of the guns is stolen from Robin's Nest, and it's a gun that Robin Masters used in research for his first novel. And we just learned that he never researches his novels.
That's right. Well, that was weird dialogue too. It was very much like very, very expository dialogue of John Hillerman has to explain where the gun came from in lots of detail, which I didn't really understand. But that
was the Murder, She Wrote half, so it was their writer.
But I find it very complicated, unnecessarily complicated. And I get that it's a mystery that Jessica's got to unravel, but where it's like, well, there's one gun, but there's two guns, but there's actually a third gun with a silencer, and two of them are alike, and one of them is different, and somebody shot somebody in the back, but Magnum thought he shot him, but it didn't really shoot him, or maybe he did, and it's and that... And that's all confusing. I haven't even gotten to the part we mentioned, the nice lady Amy, who's got the diamonds, and her ex-husband, who has come to get the diamonds from her. That's a fascinating subplot, because it is a red herring. It has nothing to do with anything.
This isn't a cookbook.
It is the opposite of a cookbook.
Scott, it is a cookbook for diet. Because diet cookbooks are lighter.
It is the opposite of a MacGuffin in that I don't care about it.
I was just perplexed by the speed at which they ripped open that wrapped package for no particular reason.
Higgins
is just like,
I'd like to think that Jessica is like, well, what are we going to do? And what are we going to say to Amy? And Higgins is like, I'm just tearing open the package and seeing what's inside. That's what I'm going to do. Diamonds is the answer. Diamonds! But they'll be safe here, disguised as a present.
And then we get another miraculous, bizarre head wound where John Hillerman's stunt double holds his own against Andrew Prine's stunt double.
Right.
And
that's because Higgins knows kung fu, you know.
Higgins gets to have a pretty good fight, but he gets this head wound that we never see again. Whenever he comes back, no head wound. He's fine.
It was just a flesh wound, David.
Yeah.
I think he just got somebody else's blood on him. I don't think it was even his.
It could have been more red paint.
That whole the diamond thing. Okay, I'm going to admit something here. I had to watch both of these episodes twice because the first time through, I didn't understand anything that I was seeing.
None of it connects. None of it makes any logical sense.
Very confusing. There's one of the women has her boss is embezzling things, and then somebody else's husband's dead, and now she has a company and somebody wants to buy it and their jewelry. It doesn't.
Okay, let me see now if I've gotten it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. And then we'll just assume that I got it right. I think the story here is that Jessica Walter, who is a grieving widow, as Scott pointed out, really grieving. Her
doesn't
husband
want to make a show of it, but sure.
She and her husband had this company that has very valuable patents, and our guy with the IBM computer really wants to buy them out.
He loves patents,
and she so he far. Loves patents as much as he loves computers that aren't plugged in. So
as much as he hates the dangerous climate of Hawaii.
So someday I will be able to take a computer outdoors.
So he's going to threaten. Someday. He's going to threaten Jessica Walter, and for some reason that he doesn't involve killing her, or maybe does involve killing her, but he wants those patents, and maybe I think she doesn't want to sell.
She loves owning a company,
right?
So she wants to prove that she built the company as much as her husband did, and maybe more. And now it's her chance.
She was the brains behind the operation.
Right.
And everyone always underestimates her. But now she'll show them.
But then why did she come to Hawaii? I don't really... But anyway, go ahead.
She wants to meet Robin Masters, but wants to deal with...
I think it's this guy who wants to buy her company, and he's based in Hawaii. So she's gonna do that. So the hitman is at the party. The hitman is sent by our IBM PC using evil businessman to either kill or wound or something Jessica Walter. He goes to the guy who is the party planner or whatever he is. He's a middleman.
That would be Broadway legend John McMartin, who I once saw in Into the Woods.
So he goes to him and says,
he's great in that.
Do a party, get her there and get the hitman there, and then he'll take care of her at the party. Of course, the hitman ends up getting killed by Magnum instead. The part that's the twist is at this point, what really happens is Jessica Walter shoots the hitman. And then in order to cover it up, she basically frames Magnum. And when that starts to unravel, she shoots the guy, the businessman, and he dies. Mm-hmm. Because she's trying to silence everything, and she stole Magnum's hat, and she leaves it at the scene of the crime.
She stole his hat and bailed him out of jail.
The stealing the hat is funny because it's like, yes, the Magnum is a maniac. He leaves his hat at the scene of the crime. But also, when she bails Magnum out, and then 1 hour later, the guy dies. Are they not at any point going? I mean, maybe not. These cops are terrible. At any point, are they going to say, "Wait a second. Why did she bail him out?" but that and so she does it, and she's the one who's got the gun and points it at Jessica and then points it at Magnum because Magnum doesn't tackle her and instead says, "Drop the gun, Joan." And then it's only because the cops arrive because a neighbor has seen escaped murderer Thomas Magnum on the
scaling a hotel.
Yeah, yeah,
as you do.
Yeah,
and that was part of integral to his plot, his plan, because he figured, well, surely someone at the Royal Hawaiian Sheraton will see me scaling and call the police, and it'll
The Royal Hawaiian Sheraton, the place where snitches stay in Hawaii.
Beautiful view of Diamond Head, though. Beautiful.
You know, Lieutenant Tanaka does not have much to do nothing to do in the first episode, but not much to do in this episode. How he cradles Magnum's hat at the crime scene is heartbreaking, because it's like the say it ain't so, Joe moment of, oh no, my fellow Tiger fan Magnum is...
And it's like, all I could think was, the first time we met Tanaka, he made a bet and won Magnum's hat. So he knows Magnum's hat.
He knows Magnum's hat.
Thing.
That's right.
It's not. It's not going to be. But he knows.
His
hat. He's like, he's
he
not
loved
a
putting that on
maniac
his head
killer.
To shield him from the sun.
Why would he leave it at a crime scene after the person was dead? Why would he do that?
Magnum is a little smarter than that.
Because he's a dope.
I guess.
And yeah. And but she planned that well before killing the hitman too. She had premeditated that because she stole it when she went and visited him and stayed in his bedroom and tried to flirt with him.
And then she saw, and she also stole the gun. So that was all part of her
all at once.
Part of her plan.
And then when she bailed him out, she sent a fake message to go back to the mansion where nobody is, so you won't have an alibi.
I take it back. This is expertly plotted.
By Murder, She Wrote standards, it makes sense.
Also, there's a woman trying to escape her abusive husband and some jewelry wrapped up and masquerading as a cookbook.
And someone is being embezzled from or doing the embezzling.
The insufferable editor who winds up getting Jessica Fletcher to come out in the first place has discovered that someone at her company is embezzling money, but is going to kill her because she found out and she's convinced of that.
Yes, but that has nothing to do with anything.
And Higgins is marked for death.
Yeah. Oh, yes, by someone he's offended over his many years in the British Army, apparently.
Which he's never suggested in any of the other times when people have been shooting at him in seven seasons of the series.
No.
But, you know... But he forgot he had ever been taken a hostage. Too.
Maybe
he's had too many head injuries.
Maybe. Yeah. The bit of directorial flourish that I appreciate in the Murder, She Wrote episode is there's that scene where the creepy husband talks to Jessica Walter, I think, in the lobby of the Sheraton.
Which Sheraton is
lobby?
That?
It's the one in downtown Honolulu. It's the Grand Hawaiian, Royal Hawaiian.
The Grand Hawaiian.
I don't know.
The Grand Royal Hawaiian.
Grand
Home of Churches.
So that's a shot that made me laugh because the first part of it is in a mirror, but you don't know it's in a mirror. And then it pans over and you realize it's in a mirror. And I thought, well, that was completely unnecessary. But I kind of liked it. Because
it was crossover.
Like, you gotta do, like the crossover. You got to do something to keep it interesting. And they're like, oh, look, there's a giant mirror here. Why don't I start the shot in the mirror and then pan over? And you're like, whoa, wait a second. That was a mirror.
The directorial mirror flourish that cracked me up was at the end when Jessica is facing off against Jessica. Hang on. And and it's before Magnum shows up on the ledge. If you look carefully, you can see the boom operator in the reflection behind Angela Lansbury for a few minutes.
Well, you were really bored, weren't you? If you're looking, if you're analyzing the type of pistols being used and looking for the boom operator. Who knows if that's was in the original. I think all of these shows have gone through like remastering from off of the film, and I wouldn't surprise me if some of that stuff was like not in the frame.
Oh, this was right in the middle.
Oh, what? So great.
No, this was not.
Oh, it's just a reflection on the glass. Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That happens.
Like, well, it's not like you
nobody,
see him.
Nobody
like,
on TV in 1986 was going to notice that.
Yeah. No. And maybe it's high def. I don't know.
So, Jessica, this these episodes are kind of nonsensical, and like I said, I'd be okay with that if I got more kind of fun interaction between the characters, because I feel like on any crossover, that's really what you want, is that moment of like, oh, look, it's these characters that are that never interact, but we get to see them interact. And you know, Magnum has that moment where he breaks into Jessica's hotel room and she's in the robe and he says, nice robe, and that's okay. The Higgins stuff with her is better. It's just, I don't know, that was the thing that disappointed me about these. Not that the plot made no sense. I thought the Murder, She Wrote episode at least tried to keep the various plates spinning and throw some red herrings at us and have it be twisty, yeah, and turny. And even though I kind of didn't know what the heck was going on and it didn't make a whole lot of sense, at least I kind of went with it. But it was just lacking that other piece of it, which is that I didn't like Magnum being a jerk in the first episode to her. And in the second episode, there wasn't enough good like character stuff, and other than some of the stuff with Higgins, because Higgins basically has a crush on Jessica Fletcher, because of course he would, who wouldn't, and he's going to go see the Fall Colors in Maine or something and go on a date with Jessica Fletcher probably.
Perhaps I will take my annual vacation there. Mm.
Mm-hmm. And I would like some advice on restaurants.
Yeah. Yes. Don't visit Cabot Cove, Higgins.
No, he will die. That'll just be the end of it.
She'll kill him. I didn't think he was too mean to her in the first half. Like he's condescending, yeah, but he's mean to Dorothy Loudon, and rightly so. But he's just sort of like, he's condescending to her. And then in the Murder, She Wrote half, it's more like when he's in the jail cell, he's very meek, right? He's like, well, can you get Higgins to bail me out? And it's like, what's going on? But you know, at least they didn't hate one another. I mean, I hate it when you have these crossovers where, oh, we have our two main characters who have to be butting heads, and they were gentle. They you know, that at least was not totally stereotypical.
If memory serves, on the Simon and Simon crossover, Rick and AJ do not get along with Magnum at all.
No.
Yeah.
No. But that's a more direct rivalry.
And now I'd like to bring in the host of the Simon and Simon podcast. Oh, no! And I'll
it's called Podcast and Podcast.
Yep. I was going to say it's Random and Random.
If only all of the CBS shows had crossovers on Magnum. You could have had Dallas. You could have had Jake and the Fat Man, Wise Guy. They're all there. All our friends.
Jake and the Fat Man was created after to use the stuff that Magnum left behind.
They did what, 2 years in LA,
and then tentative things,
and then they moved
let's
to Hawaii.
Just move. Suddenly, I'm a DA in Hawaii. Yeah, and I bring this guy with me.
So Scott, having watched this debacle, what are your overall thoughts? Is your overall thought that Murder, She Wrote is best appreciated without crossing over with the rest of the CBS primetime lineup?
I think that these characters, as portrayed in these two episodes, are better served not meeting each other.
Ships passing in the night.
Were there other Murder, She Wrote crossovers in the history of that show?
I don't think so, but later in the Murder, She Wrote oeuvre, Angela Lansbury, I think, got bored. And so there are many episodes where it's like Jessica Fletcher's like, oh, I didn't see you there. Let me tell you a story that involves characters that don't involve Jessica Fletcher, and I'll be back at the end.
Yeah, she decided, apparently, I was just reading about this in Joe Straczynski's book, that she got really bored and felt like the show was a grind. And so they like brought in these side characters who would have their own little mysteries so she could do fewer episodes. Mm-hmm. And they did that for a couple of years and it didn't really work and nobody liked it. And they brought some new producers in and kind of revamped the show. And then she was more, and they moved her to New York and had her
be teaching a class.
Exactly. And they kind of like rebooted it. And that was Straczynski who actually did a bunch of that stuff. And
yeah.
And that kind of reengaged her with Murder, She Wrote. But yeah, that's a weird, really weird part in there where they're like, Murder, She Wrote and Friends. It's like,
that's right.
No.
The what's Jessica Fletcher getting up to this week? I guess we won't know.
the closest thing they had to a crossover after Magnum was when they spun off Jerry Orbach's PI into The Law and Harry McGraw. And that was on for, you know, part of a season. And then we never saw him again because he went to Law and Order.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I feel like they were these two shows. Like it felt almost as if someone at CBS was playing the two VHS tapes of the episodes at the same time, and somehow this came out, and they're like, "All right, well, I guess we'll air it."
Yeah. No, it's. I think our reaction to it is very much like what it must have been on the production staffs, which is like,
"Yeah,
really? Are we going to do this?" And the funny thing is, so Magnum season 7, it is. It has had its day in the sun. It peaked with...
Yeah, it is all over the shop.
Yeah, season 3 through 5, but this is getting to the end. This is the next to last season.
And well, they thought it was going to be the last season. They were planning on that.
This is the one where they did, spoiler alert, they kill Magnum.
They kill Magnum at the end, and then they're like, no, he got better. He's fine. And then they did another season.
You get back here right now.
Seriously. Okay. Like, literally, he walks off into the clouds at the end of the season, and then they got renewed. So he was fine after that. And then Murder, She Wrote, meanwhile, is on the uptick. It's like, it is now at the point where it's on after... It's on Sundays after CBS football, and Pat Summerall is always saying, like, coming up next on CBS 60 Minutes, followed by Murder, She Wrote. And everybody watched. So I look at this and I think, what was the motivation even on CBS's stand? Magnum is kind of over. Are they trying to goose Magnum's ratings against, like, Cosby or whatever? Yep. They're on Thursday night? Because, yep, like,
it was against Cosby and Simpsons.
It's just very weird that they would make the effort to do this at this point in the lifespan of these shows. But some exec at CBS might have just thought, crossovers are great. Let's do more of them. Let's stick this in there. But, and, like, our response is, has got to be what their response was, which is really...
Because it takes a long time for Jessica Fletcher to show up in the Magnum episode.
So long! We're waiting for her all that time!
To use another Simpsons reference, it is like...
The fireworks factory!
Where are they going to get to the fireworks factory?
Oh my god, it is. It absolutely is.
It is.
I may have said that during the episode. I may have actually said, when are we going to get to the fireworks factory?
And the smart play would have been to start it on Murder, She Wrote, and get everyone to follow it to Magnum PI later that week.
Right.
Right? I mean, NBC, whenever I think of crossovers, I think of when Law & Order and Homicide did that. Because, again, like, yeah, you can have all the Dick Wolf shows crossing over with one another. And yes, Chicago Fire is part of the Law & Order world and all, whatever. But Homicide was a totally different company, totally different staff. And yet they worked together. Both shows gave one writer from each show, and the two writers worked together and built both episodes. And they started it on Law & Order, which was hugely popular Wednesday night. And you finished it Friday night on Homicide.
Right, because that's the other thing that baffles me about this is... Murder, She Wrote had so much more audience at this point. So you get to Sunday night and this episode starts and you're like, what?
Wait a second.
What was she on Magnum? I must have missed that. And like, that's it. You can't see it. It's all for the best. You don't want to see that episode anyway.
You don't need to see it.
But still very, very confusing. And it's too bad, too.
They'll never know how that land deal with TC and Rick ends. Where's the pity for them?
Actually, the resolution of that storyline is that it is a bad deal. The land is basically useless. And Magnum decides that he's going to put his money in it anyway because he told them he would, even though he also told them that it was a bad deal or something like that.
Because he's a stand-up guy.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Anyway, Scott, what I'm saying is there are way better episodes of Magnum PI, and we know that.
So.
And I remember as a kid watching Murder, She Wrote, and like Murder, She Wrote has a nice tone, and it's created by the Columbo guys, and it's got kind of a similar kind of tone to it, and it's solving mysteries, and it's a little Agatha Christie like, and you know I always liked Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah.
And you put them together, and it's terrible.
It is terrible. And, no. And, you know, the characters, Magnum and Jessica Fletcher, have some similarities, right? They're both kind of, people don't take them seriously.
Right. For different reasons, but yeah. Yeah, they're both unlikely detectives in ways.
Basically the only thing they have in common. But yeah.
She wears short shorts, too. I mean, don't get me
actually,
wrong.
Actually, one of my great disappointments, and they pay lip service to it, but again, it's something that they could have really run with, is Magnum is employed by a best-selling writer, and Jessica is a best-selling writer. So the other way that they could have done this is had it be tied into Robin Masters, and like Jessica comes to Robin Masters' estate because of some connection between them, some writer kind of thing. He's going to do he's sponsoring a mystery conference, and he won't be there because he's in Greece or wherever. But instead it's like it's the editor lady.
Pamela.
She's the connection. Pamela Bates.
It's very strange.
She's the connection to Robin. and Jessica is kind of accidentally connected. Like, why do it that way? Why not? You've got the author connection there. I don't get it.
It's funny that you say that, because at the time, this is back when I was starting to learn how to write TV scripts, and the first spec script I ever wrote was a Magnum PI script. And I'm watching this thing and I'm going, there's such a natural way to do this. And I thought, it should have been a mystery writers convention, and Robin Masters is mysteriously missing because he never shows up. And Jessica, for whatever reason, is accused of murder. And of course, we know she didn't do it, but they almost never did that on Murder, She Wrote. So, okay, now Magnum has to figure this out because he has to clear Robin and find Robin. And of course, he never actually finds Robin, but we'll hear from him on the phone because, and then you get to the end of that Magnum, and then something flips, and then she's going to have to save Magnum. And that's the second half. And it's just, it's a much more interesting thing. It's a more natural connection.
Yeah.
Ah!
My great disappointment is you have Angela Lansbury in a show set in Hawaii, and you make no reference to Blue Hawaii.
None. Right. Right.
It's right there on the table.
That should have been the title.
Yes!
And there should have been an Elvis impersonator in the lobby of the Sheraton Grand Hawaiian.
Yeah, the Sheraton, and she could have gone, oh, God, no, not that again, and then walked on.
Also, she might have been the one who said no.
Also, yes. No.
Everything I do in Hawaii is disastrous.
It's Dame Angela Lansbury, who did grow up in America, but she's English, speaking with her American accent as Jessica Fletcher, and John Hillerman acting opposite Dame Angela Lansbury with his fake English accent. And that I thought about that for a while. I'm like, you're John Hillerman, now you're acting opposite Angela Lansbury doing your fake English accent. It's like, wow. I mean, you got to do it. You got to do it. And as Anthony told us in our last episode, he does a serviceable job with it. But I just had that moment where I thought, aren't these two people doing the wrong accents now? But
the other season 7 thing that struck me is at the end of The Murder, She Wrote, where he's like, I'll make a deal with you. I won't buy a typewriter if you don't get a private eye license or whatever. And later that season, he buys a typewriter and writes his own little novel.
What?
Murder by Night.
Betrayal.
That episode is all his. How dare he? That's the spoiler at the end, is that it's a thing he wrote.
Murder.
He wrote.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was so disappointing.
So what we're saying here, people, is if you ever had a dream of characters from two shows you liked coming together in a crossover, just know.
Don't wish on that monkey paw.
No.
I just remember I'm already paying attention to writers' names. And so it comes up, written by Jay Hughley. I assume that's how you pronounce his name. And by that point on Magnum, I was like, yeah, he always writes good episodes. This is not the one.
It's
this
not even
is
an
like
episode.
The
like the Magnum episode is nonsensical. It is at least the Murder, She Wrote episode
it's
has
like an outline.
You can see what they're doing. Magnum episode is just like in a blender,
happens.
Script
very
in
confusing.
A blender.
Yeah.
It's not good. No, it's funny. So Lauren was just watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine through from start to finish on Hulu. And I was, and sometimes, I got the door open and I can hear what she's watching while I'm working. And she got up to the New Girl crossover. And where Fox said, you will cross these things over. And in that, what she said was and she watched both of those shows. The redeeming thing about it is that in a comedy, what you do, like with The Simpsons, is you make lots of jokes about how these things don't connect and they're weird and that these characters don't seem right. And you just try to go with the fact that it's absurd. But in these mystery shows, they kind of can't do that, or at least back in 1986 they couldn't do it. I don't know. I was so excited about seeing the Magnum Murder, She Wrote crossover that I never saw, and it's just awful. Sorry, everybody.
I still remember when NBC was doing Must See TV, and they had those, all four shows are going to have the blackout.
Except
Seinfeld, where the lights came back on and Seinfeld was totally normal, and the lights went out again.
Network executives are the true villains of these stories.
Villains, yeah.
They're the ones who done
right.
it.
They have their computers by their pools.
Yes, I was about to say.
I wonder.
I keep typing this spec and nothing happens.
I honestly wonder if that's where that came from. is that the writer of that episode was like, oh, I know, there's that ridiculously pretentious executive who always has a computer out by their swimming pool, and I'm going to put that in there, and that's, we're going to have a good laugh. Because these episodes both feel like they didn't care, and they would throw anything in that amused them, and they didn't care if no one else got the joke because they were mailing it in for a week. And it's a shame, but it's really awful. So what have we, anything else that we should talk about before we wrap this one up and before we cross over with a different podcast for our next episode?
I can't wait to appear on Random Trek.
Star Trek has never crossed over with anything but itself, right?
Right, exactly.
Supposedly, in the fifth season of Enterprise, they were in talks with Russell Davis to have the ninth Doctor.
A Doctor Who crossover,
show up, and then it was canceled.
Yeah, and actually, Stephen Moffat tried to do that with one of the Doctor Who Christmas specials that has a very suspiciously Star Trek-y bridge, that at one point there was some conversation about whether they would actually have that be a Star Trek thing. But obviously, then you get the lawyers involved, and they're like, no, that's not going to happen.
Haven't you watched that Magnum Murder, She Wrote crossover?
I think the only Star Trek crossover that exists of any kind, Scott, is that they wrote that Larry Niven wrote that episode of the animated series where he used a bunch of his his like aliens and stuff from his books. Mm-hmm. And and there was that backdoor pilot that they did, Assignment Earth, right, with Terry Garr and
Robert Lansing.
Robert Lansing.
Oh, right. That's a weird episode.
Very weird, because it's a backdoor pilot, but they didn't pick it up. That was Gene Roddenberry saying, hey, you can cancel Star Trek if you give me this show. And NBC was like, no.
Guess what? We can cancel Star Trek.
Yeah.
And they did a novel with them.
The animated Star Trek people never showed up on Scooby-Doo to help them solve a crime.
I mean, anything Filmation.
Missed opportunity, frankly.
It might have been in the Partridge Family 2400 AD or whatever.
Gilligan's Planet. I don't
know. Gilligan's Planet was pretty good.
Doctor Who crossed over with EastEnders in a anniversary special.
Are you kidding me? Really?
No. I mean, it's this super low budget anniversary special because the BBC wouldn't fund a proper anniversary special. But it's literally like they had us scenes on the, because they had the EastEnders actors and they had the set. So they literally have, and it's like old Doctor Who actors, because the show was off the air at that point. Inexplicably,
and it was like a Children in Need
special, right?
Gray-haired
Tom Baker kind of hunched over. But then they had like all the EastEnders people there giving their catchphrases and stuff. Yeah, it's really sad.
The strangest one I ever saw was the Cheers St. Elsewhere one, where the doctors from St. Elsewhere go to the Cheers bar and like have a drink and are hassled by Norm and
Carla.
Then again suggests that Cheers is just imagined by a kid with a snow globe.
The thing is, all of those shows are all connected. Even so, St. Elsewhere crosses over into Homicide. Homicide and Law and Order crossover. Homicide and Chicago Hope crossed over very briefly.
You touch Law and Order, you got all the Dick Wolf shows at that point.
And you get all the Dick Wolfs. You get The Simpsons, because John Munch was in a Simpsons and in an X-Files and in an Arrested Development.
X-Files.
And an Sesame Street episode.
Yeah. And Sesame Street.
It's all connected,
and
people.
All
except,
of these things
strangely,
are in Tommy Westfall's
except
brain.
For Simon and Simon, Murder, She Wrote, and Magnum P.I., which exist in their own universe with maybe Hawaii 5-0. And I'm starting to think that this is the reason why, is they saw this episode and they're like, nope.
Nope.
Not connected.
Can't come in.
I don't want to live in a universe where something like this happens.
It's a pocket Kalabi Yao universe off to the side of Tommy Westfall.
17 dimensions, 16 of which are really bad. The 17th dimension is diamonds. All right, well, that's Novel Connection and Magnum on Ice. They're bad. I hope to watch better Magnum PI episodes and better Murder, She Wrote episodes. Oh, by the way, before we go, in order to watch this, because Murder, She Wrote currently is going to be on Peacock, the NBC Universal streaming service, but it's not yet available. I literally bought the season 3 box set of Murder, She Wrote on Amazon so that we could watch this episode. And as a thank you, as a parting gift for Scott McNulty, at some point here, look for a season 3 Murder, She Wrote box set to arrive at your house.
And I say it again, I admire your commitment to the bit.
Gotta watch it. You gotta watch it. We gotta, if we're gonna do it, we gotta do it. Where am I gonna find
if
that Simon and Simon
guest,
episode?
He was gonna
though?
Give you two box sets.
All right, Scott McNulty, thank you so much for being on. I'm sorry that I had to subject you to this, but at least you got to like think about Murder, She Wrote a little bit. That's nice.
I'm always thinking about Murder, She Wrote, Jason.
It's true. It's true.
But thank you for having me on. I learned a valuable lesson about Magnum. The shorter his shorts, the better detective he is.
True story. That's absolutely
That's right.
The case.
It compresses the blood flow to the brain. It's yeah.
It loosens the legs. You got to get the legs loose there.
Let That's right. Give him he does his thinking with his thighs.
And Phil Michaels and David J. Lohr, thanks, guys.
Oh, anytime. All
this
I have to say
is very effective for launching this podcast, but it'll be even more effective to bash my brains in and make me forget that I ever watched the show.